From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccan. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Special announcement at the top, folks. Every day gets us a little closer to Halloween 2021. You know, longtime listeners, that we are big, big fans of the most wonderful time of the year. And in the past, we've often done something a little special. The three or four or five of us have teamed up with our colleagues to make spooky, mostly fictional stories. We've had some real weird stuff. You can hear it on our podcast feed right now. Gosh, we've done that for a number of years. But this year, we, along with some of our friends of the show, were in particular working on an entire season of spooky fiction. Matt and our pal Alex Williams got together a top-notch team of spooksters to create the second season of 13 Days of Halloween.
We only hire the best spooksters.
I love a good spookster. You guys definitely know the best in the game.
Yes. Whether we're talking about a ska band or our teams of writers and actors. I don't know if Spooksters is a ska band, but God, it sounds like one, doesn't it? Like mm-hmm. The Spooksters, they cover... Yeah.
There's a 70s rock band called Spooky Tooth, which I always thought was a real cute name.
Oh, that's cool.
Ooh.
I wrote a story about an evil dentist called the Judas Tooth, and I just really want to send it somewhere. Yeah.
Is it safe, Ben? Is it safe?
Is it safe? Well, that's a story for another day, but you're right.
With Spooksters, yeah. I think you got to add like a town, like the Sacramento Spooksters, because then, feels like it could be a team as well.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, yeah, totally.
Yeah. So we're on to something with this, I think. We wanted to say that you never know when we'll make a new spooky story on stuff they don't want you to know, because Noel, Matt, and I put a lot of time and attention into those things. So we suggest that right now, while you're waiting, you check out 13 Days. It's worth your time. But still, the Halloween spirit compels us to move ever further into the realm of the strange, the occult, the supernatural. And today's question is... today's question's a weird one. Is witchcraft on the rise? Oh, before we dive in, I don't know if I told you guys, but I first learned of this concept a number of years ago when someone else on our network was telling me, hey, spiritualism, or the idea of, you know, non-traditional religious beliefs, is on the rise right now. And she predicted it. Which is the interesting thing. So,
did she use a candle?
You know, she's definitely a person into candles. Let's put it that way. Cool. So maybe it was, you know, one of those cursed candles with a black flame that gives no light and no heat, or maybe it was just a Yankee Candle Company candle.
I'm not sure.
I like the ones that smell like cinnamon.
I like them. They're just crazy expensive. You know what I mean? How did candles become the $20?
Dude, you got to get on the cedar smell and just fill your home with it. And they make them with those wick. I don't know what they call them.
The wooden wicks?
The wooden wicks. Mm-hmm. Oh, guys.
I used to have one that smelled like leather.
Oh, that's cool. I've always somewhat, because I'm always eternally hungry on several levels. I hate the ones that smell like food. I feel like they're betrayals. They're an act of betrayal.
You wouldn't be into a quesadilla candle, Ben?
Ooh. I would very much be into it, but I have a problem. That's the issue. but yeah, no, actually, that's a great idea, and I'm glad you brought it up. We should make that so mote it be, as they say. Here are the facts. So we're talking about what is loosely called witchcraft, and maybe we can talk a little bit about the stereotypical images of witches. Like when I hear the term,
I immediately think of like a black clad crone with the pointed brimmed hat and flying across the night sky to conduct a black mass, cursing crops. You know, I think of the witch from the excellent horror film, The Witch.
AKA the Witch. And only yes. Two V's, but it's hard to say like that. Yeah, and in that version of a witch, if I'm not mistaken, flies with the broomy part of the broom facing forward.
I believe you might be correct. In that trope, there are several different things that might be used to help one fly, like a mortar and pestle. It's not always a broom, and it's weird because when we're thinking of these stereotypes, which is what they are, we're also wrapped up in ideas of real life historical events, terrible, terrible things like the horrors of the Inquisition or the Salem witch trials. And they've inspired countless works of film, fiction, and of course, podcasts. But one thing that was really important to us when we started exploring this idea was to ask ourselves, what about all the misconceptions that get wrapped up in that, you know? So we have to start with the basics. Like what exactly do people mean when they say so-and-so is a witch?
Well, like the very etymology of the word itself, the true history of what's now known as this thing called witchcraft is pretty unclear and is largely up to interpretation in the modern day. It all depends on who you talk to. And nowadays, what could be seen as a very damaging stereotype of a practitioner of magic with a CK, or perhaps what might be referred to as the black arts, specifically by folks who maybe lean in a more religious direction. This whole construct really is a very Christian invention. But the etymology of the current word has its roots in Old English, specifically Low German, Wicke, for a magician, who is a woman, a sorceress, also known as a sorceress, Wicca for the male version, also Low German, that would be referred to as Wiccan, AKA to use witchcraft, or a vicar, which could be seen as maybe something more along the lines of a fortune teller or a soothsayer, someone who has the gift of sight.
Anyone else hear the word vicar? In there?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I always thought that was funny too. It is true that the exact etymology is unclear, but historians generally agree that if you trace it back or you dive through whatever historical records exist, you'll see that there are several closely related words that describe practices like soothsaying or divination or sorcery, and they describe names or terms for those suspected of practicing it. And this is not all, obviously, this is not all quote unquote like bad or evil stuff. You know, there's a left-hand path, there's a right-hand path. We're talking about a lot of traditional medicine. Right. We're talking about a lot of healing techniques and a lot of things like how do we predict the passage of the crops and the seasons? And this, I love that we're pointing out that what is called witchcraft has been defined by people outside of these practices for a while. Like the concept and the fear of some magically powered antagonist with some interconnection to forces beyond those of mortal civilizations is way, way older than Christianity. So it's somewhat misleading to say that the idea of witchcraft is a Christian invention. They certainly ran with it and used it as a rationalization to do terrible, terrible things. But witches or soothsayers or, you know, practitioners of occult arts exist in the most ancient stories of humanity. They've been there from the jump, even before spies, for anybody who listened to that previous episode.
Sure. I mean, dating as far back, literarily speaking, in terms of what we have in the written record, as Homer's The Odyssey, way back from 800 BCE, with the character of Circe, who would have been, you know, a very important figure in ancient Greek culture, referred to as an oracle. Someone who would often have to be consulted before a quest of some kind or some sort of very important life kind of journey, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just so. And even in like ancient Roman law, there is a ton of commentary about what they call illicit magic, meaning that some stuff was just sort of expected and normalized by society.
Sanctioned even, right? Like by the government,
By the government of the time. And so, of course, spiritual practitioners, that's the word we're going to go with instead of witches. Spiritual practitioners across the planet had their own sets of beliefs, practices, and standings in society. Sometimes, you know, they would be revered as holy figures with access to higher planes of knowledge. And then sometimes they'd be vilified. But wherever you find early human civilization, you'll find people that later organizations like the Inquisition would describe as witches, because they were doing something different, unorthodox, or unexpected. And we had earlier in the course of our diving into this episode, we had reached out to contact some friends of ours, some colleagues who do practice things that would generally be described in mainstream society as magic.
Yes, several different classes of magic. One person we spoke with was, I believe, self-described as a chaos magician. I think that's correct. Mm-hmm. And then another person who perhaps would classify it more as spiritualism with a dabbling in witchcraft. It's very interesting to speak with people who do attempt to actually carry out rituals of some sort. We learned a ton, I think, Ben.
Yeah, we did. And these were important things. We dove into a conversation about the history of various practices. We dove into the controversies or contradictions between some practices. And we asked some stuff that I think we will also find turns up in later episodes if we do something on, you know, thought forms or tulpa the idea of cursed objects, right? So
I don't want to get into it too deeply at this point, maybe in the episode, but the concept of going inwardly, traveling inwardly, that's a weird way to say it, but to have an effect in the outward space in the actual physical plane was a really cool concept, and it matches up so much with a lot of spiritualist beliefs, like non-dogmatic religious belief that's going on right now.
Yeah, and also it made my midnight to hear these folks agree with our pal Damian Patrick Williams' earlier description of magic. He said weaponized psychology, and I think that is a very articulate way to depict that. Yeah. And so the modern quote unquote witch or magic practitioner, we have to define what that is before we figure out whether or not witchcraft is on the rise. And there are conspiracy theories at play here. There are people and institutions who believe that there is an organized systemic attempt to turn people away from Christianity or to use infernal powers for worldly gain. And that's an idea that happens in, you know, the so-called satanic panic. It's an idea that is always kind of around. And a lot of it dates back to the Christian church's attempt to stamp out what it saw as heresy. Anything it saw as spiritual competition, including, you know, not just like the Cathars, not just someone who had a different take on monotheism, but anything that was from a pre-existing religion, native beliefs, ancestor worship, animism, all that stuff. Like, imagine we're a band of early Christian explorers. We won't have to get into how early, but we have ventured into this new land, deep in the primeval forest, right? Deep into
love that word.
Me too, man. Deep into a pre-Christian area of what would be Germany today or something. And when we're there, we stumble upon like a small village, and they are clearly like ritualistically killing a bear or a dog or a goat or something. And our first reaction is going to be, this isn't I don't think this is our thing, guys. I think these, I think they're doing something different. And then it's only a matter of time before someone else in our crew goes, I agree, and I think it's bad.
And then usually the person leading the group or is the person that controls the religious dogma on your side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a priest who says, and it's bad.
Well, and interestingly, I mean, this would be what would be more considered to be a pagan ritual, which, you know, many of the Christian holidays that we celebrate have roots in paganism.
Which really can just be a stand-in for anything that is not the main thing that we believe.
Right. Well, we pick and choose so much. I say the royal we, I guess, you know. Organized religion often picks and chooses from other cultures and then tries to erase the original in many cases.
Yeah, shout out Council of Nicaea. Let's hear it for them, you know. You might not.
Should we?
Might not. No, we shouldn't. You might not agree with it, but they did make an impact on history that continues today. Anyhow, I think it's absolutely true. And we also, to the point about picking and choosing, we also see a lot of religious syncretism. It's what happens anytime two different cultures encounter one another. We had a pretty interesting conversation about Santa Claus earlier. This is what we were alluding to. There's one figure from the Western Alps that has a couple of different names. You'll see it called Bafuna or Perkta or Berta. And this was, get this, a spirit associated with winter who is known for punishing violations of social mores and rewarding good actions. She was also portrayed as an older woman. She represented cold and winter. And when folks were diving into, you know, like the history of what would be described as witchcraft, they said this figure, this pre-Christian figure, seems to have a lot in common with stereotypes of witches. And then also Santa Claus, who is an Omega-level mutant in the Marvel Universe, but also... does a lot of things that would be described as witchcraft, right? We're flying.
Yeah. Can, you know, presumably change shape to go from being a quite portly gentleman to, you know, inexplicably sliding down a very narrow brick chimney.
Mm-hmm. Has power over the fae. The elves and the reindeers are kind of like familiars or companion spirits. Speaks every language, as we pointed
that
out.
That was the whole conversation. Somehow speaks every language and can exist in every shopping mall across the planet. The ones that are still open.
Yes. And especially the ones that are abandoned. I'm telling you, I think
our spooky.
Yeah. I think our spooky story this year is like an end of the year, you know, Merry Christmas thing. But we also have to remember that even as Christianity became more prevalent, and this is something you see a lot of writing about this occurring in Western Europe, but it's tale as old as time, right? Or tale as old as Christianity. As Christianity was expanding across the world, Christians were still stumbling across things they couldn't explain, remnants of those who came before, standing stones, mounds in the ground. You know, where did this come? Why would someone go to the trouble of building this? And they would also
A couple of strange looking caves were really big,
yes.
Right? Or like alcoves, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you would have the locals would be familiar with this. It'd be normalized. They might even consider themselves followers of some branch of religion, right? Some branch of Christianity. And this is not to dog on Christians. This is just a thing that happened pretty often. The locals who lived there would say, you know, oh yes, we are loyal followers of Christianity, and there's always been so, but you have to watch out for those standing stones. You shouldn't go there when the stars and the moon are in a certain alignment, you know, because of the ghost or the demons.
And never disturb the cairn. Is that how you say it? The standing stones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. Or even in like, you know, very, very, very old religious structures like cathedrals and whatnot, they have, you know, these gargoyles that are essentially demonic creatures that one could associate with like being a familiar of a witch or something, but they're also kind of co-opted and meant to protect the structure and you know, those within from those very evil spirits.
Yeah, it's a conversation. And if you are these, if you are traveling with us, our hypothetical band of early Christian wanderers, and you see this stuff that really freaks you out, then you can imagine it doesn't really help when the locals also say, there are a couple of folks in town who can actually work with these creatures and, you know, try to stay on their good side. What are we talking about? We'll tell you after a word from our sponsor.
We are back, and we're going to jump in the images you may have swirling around your head when the words witch or witchcraft are uttered. What do you see? Why do you see it? What are the iconic images that are associated with that? Well, if we're jumping through time, we're now in the 1590s, which is the last leg of Queen Elizabeth I's reign. And in England at that time, the concept of a witch, the image in people's minds of a witch was pretty much crystallized. It's the hag image that we've already mentioned, perhaps a poor woman, maybe lame in some way with her physical characteristics, perhaps blind in one eye or a cloudy eye, something's wrong with it, perhaps gets very angry very easily and wants to enact revenge in some way. And the concept, you'll see it in old like story tales about a witch, that something small happens to her, and no matter how slight that infraction is, she will like curse the ever loving out of you.
Whoa! It reminds me of the Rapunzel story, where I believe the infraction was stealing a cabbage from the witch's garden to feed a hungry pregnant woman, and it involved, I believe, in you know, infant theft and blinding the you know, the husband with a you know, cursed briar patch or something. Serious, you know, scorched earth kind of retribution there.
Well, in defense of some witches, while they might overreact, they are also, I think,
in stories,
responding to persecution from the community, where their existence itself is taboo. Hansel and Gretel were vandalizing her house.
Yes, you're right. And that is so important. A reaction to being mistreated within society. Seriously, that is so important to this whole topic, this whole episode.
Yeah. And this, and what we're talking about here, too, is real. This idea of a scorched earth policy, this idea of very vengeful individuals was important for the powers that be at the time in Western Europe, because they needed a rationale, right? They needed a reason to persecute these people to such an extreme degree. And they also were quarreling with their own misogyny pretty often. Laws of the time that you were just describing, Matt, had been sort of updated to include the opinions of demonologists. And a lot of these demonologists said, you know what, the idea that, and this is their thinking, not ours, the idea that these old women can do magic spitting in the face of God, they're not powerful enough for that. They're old. They're women. It's the devil. They're working for the devil. And if they have a cat, the cat's in on it. I'm being pretty basic with it,
dude. No, you're right on the money, though. The thinking that was occurring there.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's why people like Professor Diane Perkis estimate some 30,000 to 60,000 people may have died as a result of these witch hunts. So there's a lot of history, a lot of blood.
Not to mention that to this day, animal shelters won't adopt out black cats around Halloween because they're so often mistreated because of that stereotype of the black cat being somehow associated with witches and the occult.
Yeah, it's a true story. I mean, history is still with us. Faulkner was right when he said the past isn't past. So
yeah. Can I do a quick plug just really fast? If you're interested in witch trials, specifically the ones that occurred in Salem, Massachusetts, please check out Unobscured Season 1. It's a podcast. You will love it. It's really good. Okay.
Heard of it. Quite good.
Mm-hmm. And this also, the events in Salem are also likewise wrapped up in the concept of the quote-unquote magic witch or practitioner. And many of the practices that at that time were associated with witchcraft are around today in some form. As a matter of fact, if you look around, you will see that many, many, many people nowadays may self-identify as witches or Wiccans or practitioners of some associated belief system. Of course, it's unfair to lump all of them together in a single group. And there are a lot of people who might not consider themselves a quote-unquote witch or a sorcerer of some kind, but they still engage in practices, either recreationally, nostalgically, maybe it's something in their family that you do, or with serious intention. And those practices, while they may not be called magic, definitely descend from earlier practices associated with witchcraft. As a matter of fact, as you're listening today, conspiracy realists, some of us may be thinking, oh, that's right. That's like, especially if you're in the South, where the Southern U.S., where folk magic is a very, very old thing that existed in step with organized religion. We might have just unlocked a memory for you. And if so, we'd love to hear it. We're pretty sure you're out there, because however defined, however murky the origins, there is one thing for sure. Witchcraft is actually on the rise. Here's where it gets crazy.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, however you define witchcraft, it appears that it and other associated practices are in fact rising in the United States. It's something that's a little bit tough to measure, given that there are so many different things wrapped up in this, and that the term itself is so loaded. It's been used as a term of abuse in the past. It's one of these things that's then been sort of taken back, and it's just a very catch-all kind of term, so it does make it a little tough to kind of parse out what all is included under that kind of umbrella. But one way to get a good sense of this, kind of a snapshot, is to go to the most well-defined sources that remain largely the same as they have historically. We've already mentioned Wiccan or pagan practitioners.
Yeah, this is fascinating, because we're going to see a pattern that's similar to stories of the Illuminati. Honestly, what's called the Wiccan faith grew out of the writings of a guy named Gerald Gardner. He was a customs officer, and in 1954, he wrote a book called Witchcraft Today, and it talked about his experience in a coven. And according to other members of the coven, their tenets and values were allegedly passed down all the way down from the Middle Ages. Scholars would later conclude that maybe some of that was based in fact, but Gardner was also probably styling on it a lot, inventing, embellishing. And the reason I say it's similar to the Illuminati is you'll see a lot of secret society groups who claim an ancient lineage. Then there's no real way to prove or disprove it.
It's important here to just the conversation we were having the other day with the practitioners, Ben, the concept of Wicca and what that was, and we're going back to the 1950s popularization of that term as that thing that was written about by this guy Gardner. But then also taking it back to the etymology of, right, Wiccan, Vicca, and all those vicar. It's not all the same thing wrapped up together. This thing that's described in Gardner's book is his version, right? Like, this is what we're saying. So I guess it was just difficult for me to wrap my head around that concept initially, that this wasn't Wicca, the thing that's described in his book, isn't the thing that goes all the way back that would be described as witchcraft.
Sure. I mean, what I always associate Wicca with is, you know, communion with nature, kind of returning to that sort of closeness with the earth and the roots of, you know, creation and all of that. And obviously it's more than that, but that's just, you know, as sort of an outsider, that's what I've always associated with in a very positive light.
Yeah, these practices are not monolithic and should not be treated as such. What's fascinating and important for us about paganism or the Wiccan practice is that we being outside civilization, have the most information on that. So when you hear claims that witchcraft, however defined, is on the rise, those claims are based on several things, like several noticeable trends, but the hard numbers that you're going to find are usually going to be from self-reporting polls of people who listed their religious identification or affiliation as paganism or Wiccan. In 2014, the Pew Research Center said that the U.S.'s adult population of pagans and Wiccans was about 730,000. That's on par with the number of people who are Unitarians. And then later we saw this number go up to about 0.4% of Americans, which sounds very small until you realize that's around 1 to 1.5 million people identifying either as Wiccan or pagan. And again, this is just one among many groups, and not all witches, hashtag not all witches. But it's fair to say most people who are doing these practices may not consider themselves specifically pagan or Wiccan. They can have any number of aims. They can specialize in certain spells, specialize in certain goals. There's a New York Times article I'd like to draw everybody's attention to, came out a couple years back by Jessica Bennett, called "When Did Everybody Become a Witch?"
It's a great question.
And the subtitle is "Witch Parties, Witch Protests, and a Bevy of New Books. We have reached peak witch."
Which is which?
I know.
No one knows.
Right? Yeah. So this is interesting, because you will see things like the author points out. You might see your coworkers using tarot cards, doing readings on their lunch breaks. You might have somebody say, "Hey, join us together. We're going to have a ceremony that's aimed at career success." There, people are like witch influencers on Instagram. You know, people in the world of podcasting have described themselves as witches. There's performance art. It goes on and on.
And let's not forget, too, I mean, for many, this is very much a religion, right? It's not just a fashion statement. You know, it really is a set of beliefs and something that is adhered to in a very similar way to the rituals of Catholicism or Christianity or you know, Buddhism.
Yeah. I it's true, but I think the mass popularization, you can trace it back to one thing. Do you know what that
Magic
one thing
the
is?
Is it Magic the Gathering?
No.
It's Magic the Gathering.
I wish. It's The Craft.
You're joking.
The 1996 movie,
Light
The Craft.
A feather, stiff as a board. That's yeah.
Well, because our whole generation, I don't know, whatever. I it was so very popular where I was.
It really was. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. But that couldn't account for the current uptick, though. I mean, just like maybe the, like, you know, what's the word? The mainstreaming of it in like the zeitgeist. Certainly that would have played a hand in it.
I think they occur concurrently. I think the craft is a symptom of a larger thing. And when I say symptom, I don't mean to imply that it's something bad. There's another one I want to point out while we're with Pew Research. Later in 2017, they went back and they said, well, let's look at just the idea of New Age beliefs. And they found that 60% of people living in the U.S. identify with at least one, if not more, of the following beliefs: psychics, psychic powers, astrology, the presence of spiritual energy inside inanimate objects, reincarnation, and also more than a quarter of people in the U.S. say they think of themselves as spiritual, but not religious. In an increasingly secular society, you can still have these beliefs that don't match religion. You might not consider yourself religious, but you can have your potion and drink it too, I guess, is the idea. Sort of a best of both worlds thing. And in many ways, sociologically, if you just look at the sociological trends and kind of the cause effect, and you put all the ideas of magical belief to one side, identifying in this way could also be seen as an act of protest, right? Self-selecting to say, I'm a witch, fight the power. Right.
Yeah.
That's part and parcel of it. Let's actually pause for a word from our own familiars, and then we'll return with maybe a specific example of something like that.
And we're back. To Ben's point before the break, Cherwell.org has a fantastic example of describing how witches are uniting to fight for political goals, for political aims, specifically against Donald Trump, former President Donald Trump.
Yes. From this article there in Cherwell, I guess I'll read just part of a quote here. It says, on the evening of Donald Trump's inauguration, a witchcraft community called, quote, Magic Resistance formed within the United States, and it has continued to meet throughout his presidency. So this was written prior to a new president coming into office. The group performed binding spells, and they gather together tarot cards, feathers, and candles, amongst other items, alongside unflattering photographs of the president. This ritual is performed each waning crescent moon so that the president's malignant works may, quote, fail utterly. Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. There. So this reminds me of the attempts by the Vatican exorcist Amorth to remotely exorcise people as in a way that was a political protest. And in this case, it seems to be very much the same. The group performed their final, what do you call it, Matt? Their final binding on January 12th of 2021. And there have been similar protests on all sides of the political spectrum across the globe. And sometimes they are more symbolic. Sometimes the people doing these things purposely think of it as performance art.
Sure. It reminds me of in the 60s, a group in San Francisco, I believe, called the Yippies, led by Kenneth Anger, I want to say, who was like a kind of an experimental filmmaker and activist. They did a sort of a happening where they attempted to levitate the Pentagon, like 2 inches, you know, again, purportedly using witchcraft, but it really was, like you said, Ben, more of an act of protest and kind of a goof, you know, to get the squares riled up, you know?
Well, what they don't tell you guys is that it worked.
Yeah, 1 centimeter, proven. But, you know, witchcraft, to that end, witchcraft can also kind of be seen as a fashion thing, like an aesthetic quality in and of itself for its own enjoyment in that way. That side of it has certainly seen a renaissance, leading to a lot more mainstream curiosity around it.
Yeah, especially, you know, if you live in a country where you're not going to get burned at the stake or executed for holding those beliefs or participating in those practices. I do want to point out, maybe this is an episode for the future. There are many areas of the world right now where people are persecuted or accused of witchcraft. We even, a few years ago, talked about the danger that's posed in some countries to children who have albinism, because their bodies are considered powerful magical relics or body parts. So this is real, even if it seems like inquisitions and witch hunts were hundreds of years ago, there's still violence associated with this kind of persecution.
Well, and not to put it in the same basket at all, but I think I've been pretty vocal about my ex-wife, who I'm very close with, you know, considers herself Wiccan and does these kind of rituals, and it's something that's very important to her. And while our daughter doesn't like necessarily identify like that, she does appreciate that aspect of her mom's life and her beliefs. And she definitely has co-opted some of the more aesthetic qualities of it. Like, she likes to wear, you know, dark kind of goth type clothing and, you know, pentagrams and upside down crosses and things like that. But to her, it is more of like an aesthetic thing. But there are some kind of shitty dudes at her middle school that, you know, will kind of call her a devil worshiper and, you know, kind of bully her about this. So, you know, it's definitely still something that hangs around, you know, that stigma.
Yeah, this is interesting. So I looked at a couple of different ways to answer the question, is witchcraft on the rise? First problem is how to define it. It's been defined by its like self-appointed enemies. It's a little bit complicated to get hard numbers because specifically the U.S. government is real gun shy about collecting detailed religious information, because this country has something that I very much support called the Separation of Church and State. And there are organizations like Pew that have tried to fill in that data gap. And because of that, when they're asking about witches, they're primarily asking about Wicca because it's the easiest to trace, the easiest to define. And Trinity College in Connecticut ran three large, very detailed surveys of religion. They showed that there was tremendous growth from 1990 to 2008 from people identifying as Wiccans. This number is still smaller than those numbers we discussed earlier in 2014, 2017. So the thing is actually happening. There is a trend. It is real. It's traceable. It's proven.
Yes. And we also know that you probably heard the phrase of the place, Trinity College, and thought, that sounds a little Christian to me. like, is there a reason why they're interested in Wicca? It was a larger study. Like Ben said, it wasn't just, I don't think the motivation was to call out those who identify as Wiccan.
Yeah, it wasn't to improve the methodology of witch hunters, that's for sure. but the thing that we need to realize about this is that there is an active conspiracy theory, right? That there is a grand war between heaven and hell with humans as heroes and pawns, and so some of the fears about the growth or the mainstreaming of these practices go back to that idea. But there is an alternative answer. Don't want to bust this as a conspiracy theory. I just think it's really interesting to note that when we ask, why is witchcraft on the rise? We're talking about sociology. There's a great article from The Atlantic where Bianca Bosker argues that not only is this... It's weird because I had the same suspicion. Not only is witchcraft on the rise now, but it has waxed and waned and risen in popularity cyclically across culture and across time. And Bosker traces it to times of social uncertainty, you know, plummeting of trust in establishment ideas. What's that old list? We used to have this old list that would whip out of things that have a higher rating than Congress.
And yeah, like, I remember that.
Like there, I think there were a couple of STDs that had a higher approval rating than Congress. So that's what
you can get rid of some STDs. It's really hard to get rid of Congress.
There we go. Yeah. But that's the idea. Like regardless of your own, I guess, personal ideologies or beliefs, many people are increasingly jaded with what they see as the establishment for one reason or another. And people have asked, well, not just in this current age, but in the past, people have asked the valid question, who do these institutions actually serve, right? And check out our lobbying episode, by the way. But it's fascinating. She notes this isn't the first time it's happened.
No. But we'll read a quote here. This is, again, from the Atlantic article from Bianca Bosker. She says, quote, in the 19th century, as transcendentalism and the women's suffrage movement took hold, witches enjoyed the beginnings of a rebranding from wicked devil worshippers to intuitive wise women. Woodstock and second wave feminism were a boon for witches, whose popularity spiked again following the Anita Hill hearings in the 1990s and again after Donald Trump's election and alongside the hashtag the Me Too movement. And we... In our conversation with the practitioners, Ben, this is a major topic, just about why we see these trends and then taking those trends back to kind of the origins of some of these practices, when there's always been an established, not always, in many parts of the world, for most of the time, there has been an established patriarchy that defines essentially what a woman can and cannot do. And this was a way to have power and to fight back, even if it's perceived in the eyes of those people who are attempting to control you.
Well, and you say intuitive wise women, to me, that's full circle back to the oracle type figure where they were like sanctioned by the state and respected and treated with reverence because they served like, you know, a function in that society. So it does kind of interestingly feel like we've kind of gone full circle back to that way of looking at things. I mean, not like, you know, across the board, but it does seem like the mainstream is starting to catch up to that.
Mm-hmm. And it makes sense from a sociological perspective. Again, if the ordinary, mundane, normal avenues of power and enfranchisement are failing, there is some sort of logic in giving alternative approaches a shot. Is it there not? I mean, no matter how unorthodox those alternative approaches might sound, the trends seem to indicate that modern witchcraft, this is another point Bosker makes, has drawn in more women or female-identifying people than men, as well as many people of color and individuals who are queer or transgender, which, of course, is like a gender-agnostic kind of description, right? It's like pilot. Anybody can be a pilot. And on the flip side, it's an inarguable reality that throughout history, a lot of those witch hunts, a lot of those crackdowns were really meant to be crackdowns on women. So in a way, just identifying oneself as a witch can, for some, be a form of activism. And don't even get us started with the conflicts of interest in the Inquisition. You know, some of those folks, they got a cut of the estate if the case went through. So,
right.
Yeah.
Dude. So with all of this, what we've learned today, you can see why there may be a growing interest, a continually growing interest right now in witchcraft, whatever that is, and however it's defined by you when you're thinking about it in your mind. I want to talk a little bit about our conversation a little more, Ben, just in what people should do if they're interested in this stuff. One thing I personally did in preparation for this and just for my own self was to visit a local bookstore that offers, you know, they will sell you books on the history and practice of many different types of magic and witchcraft and other things like that, spiritualist movement things. And I just talked to some people. I was talking to several people who work there who were just really well informed and were able to kind of guide me to what books I needed to be checking out.
Well, and I'm sure, you know, a specialized shop like that would be obviously an incredible resource and a really cool way to really dive in. But if you don't have an occult bookstore in your neck of the woods, this stuff's at Barnes & Noble. I mean, you can definitely find interesting books about just about every aspect of Wicca and spiritualism and any kind of new age religion that you might want.
Yeah. And so with our takeaway that clearly there are problems with defining witchcraft, but clearly it's on the rise, and we've kind of figured out why, rather than some big deep conspiracy theory that would require a lot of otherworldly organization to be successful. We do have two big takeaways, and this was a point the chaos practitioner made, which is read the history of something before you start getting very experimental and exploring these things in practice. Make sure that you are well educated. You can find, like Matt and Nola said, resources online for free as well. Mm-hmm. And this stuff will only further empower you with knowledge should you decide to become an active practitioner. I would say for the second part, for the folks who are perhaps more on the skeptical end of the spectrum here, or for those of us who have our own strong religious or spiritual beliefs, just be respectful of these folks. You know, they're not out here trying to curse your well or make your cattle ugly. Oh, no, wait, make their milk bad. That was one of them.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's just like anybody else's personal faith. We've always said on this show, those beliefs are your own. They're no one else's. It's not our job to tell you what to think, but if what we have found today is true, then we can expect this trend to continue in step with instances of social unrest. I can't wait to hear the stories that we're going to get from some of our conspiracy realists today, guys. I think we're going to see some commonalities, and I think we're going to learn some pretty cool stuff.
Let us know what you think. You can find us on the usual internet places of note, such as Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, where we are at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, and we're at Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram.
Yes, and you can also reach out to us with your voice. You can call the number 1-833-STDWYTK. Leave a voicemail. Please give yourself a cool nickname. You have 3 minutes. Say whatever you want. We just want to hear anything you have to say. Please, please, please. But if 3 minutes is not enough time for you to get all of your information down, we ask instead that you send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.